when I embarked some years ago in that long-term research about apocalyptic movement in Islam, it was because I was shocked and bewildered by what I was seeing more and more in the streets of the different cities I was visiting, as well as a growing wave of literature with very gorish front pages, a lot of blood, a lot of earthquakes, a lot of catastrophe, a lot of little or big devils. And I tried to follow up on that, and it became a full-fledged academic research and a book that I hope will be soon translated in English. And I was, in fact, which is a good thing with certain research, overwhelmed by what I found, because I had no idea I would find so much. I would find so much material and so much food for thought. So today is not an academic debate. It's much more policy-oriented, so I will focus on three points that I think that are interesting for us to assess what this new trend represents and, of course, the threat that we can find behind it. And with Mahdi, we agree to have a division that is certainly not sectarian, but that is linguistic. So he is very generous in that, because he speaks perfect Arabic. I don't speak Farsi, so I will stick to my side of the Arab world, but not to a sectarian divide. In fact, apocalypse in Arabic, there's no translation for it. You know, it's a Greek word that basically is associated with the revelation of something that is hidden. Huh? So if you translate Jilian, Sofra, Ro'ya, in Arabic it doesn't work. In fact, the concept in Arabic is Akhir Zaman, it's the end of time. Huh? So the end of time, really in two sentences, you are, because of course I could go through that, but it would be more academic. You have more a Sunni narrative and a Shia narrative. In the Sunni narrative, the main character is Jesus, Isa ibn Maryam, who is the 11th envoy of Islam, who will come back in Damascus, and therefore he will fight the false Messiah, al-Masih ad-Dajjal, that is therefore translated as the Antichrist, because he will fight Jesus. He will fight him in Damascus, then he will follow him up to Golan, Tiberiad, and finally he will kill him in Lod, next to today's Ben-Gurion airport. The Mahdi has a lot of power and importance in the Sunni creed, but he's more the leader of the army that will be the army of the faithful at the end of time, Jesus being the main character in this narrative. It is not, as you know, the case with the Shia in the Shia creed, where the Mahdi, being the 12th Imam, the hidden Imam, is the main figure, and he will be leading Jaysh al-Radab, Jaysh al-Mahdi, Mahdi's army, who is also the army of Ross, to defeat the unbelievers. So what is fascinating in Islam is that you have both millenarism, that is more associated with Christianity, and messianism, that is both most associated with Judaism. And the two, this idea of a Mahdi coming at a certain date, while the last apocalyptic or Mahdist insurgency, popular insurgency, the mass one, occurred in Sudan at the end of our 19th century, but at the very beginning of the Muslim 14th century. And it was very much the Sudanese Mahdi, Muhammad ibn Abdullah, was very much, the fall of El-Obeid occurred on the year 1300 of the Islamic calendar, and that opened the way to the fall of Khartoum. And it is on November 20, 1979, so on the first day of the first month of the first year of the 15th century of Islam, that Juhayman al-Utaybi led the storming of the Haram in Mecca, and that the insurgents pledged allegiance to the Mahdi, Bayn al-Rukn wal-Makam, so between the corner of the Kaaba and Makam Ibrahim, Abraham station. And you know that after that there was this siege during more than 2 weeks. The calendar is very important. You know, and now in southern Iraq, and I will finish my presentation talking about it, you have a full-fledged apocalyptic militia, Ansar Imam al-Mahdi, and there already was an upheaval in Najaf in January 2007. That was quite a bloodbath. And it was connected with the Ashura of the year 1428, because some Shia tradition say that the Mahdi will come back in Kufa on the Ashura of an even year of the Islamic calendar. So mark January 7, 2009 on your calendar, because this will be the next even Ashura, 1413. So there are three points I want to stress. The first thing is that we have this growing wave of apocalyptic literature all over the Arab world. The founder, if I may say so, because I don't have a lot of literary respect for this writer of this new genre, because it is a new genre, is an Egyptian secular minor journalist with absolutely no religious background, who published in 1986 a book called The Antichrist, El Masih al-Dajjal, that had tremendous success ever since. And he was facing a problem because, you know, in the Islamic tradition, you have a lot of hadith, you have a lot of quotes about the end of time, but you don't have a coherent narrative. So to establish a coherent narrative that would fit modern Englishes, he imported massively from three non-Islamic sources. The main, the first source are Jewish and Christian prophecies. So you have suddenly Daniel, Zachariah, Isaiah, and of course the Book of Revelation, heavily quoted in this kind of book. The second source is the anti-Semitic propaganda from the West, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, but also Sherev Spiridovich and all the different conspirationist writers. So I just visited at the Holocaust Museum the fascinating exhibition about the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. But this is something even worse, because it's not only using the protocols as an anti-Semitic weapon, it's to use it even as a Gnostic document, as some kind of a roadmap for the Jewish Antichrist to discover his program and how, at the end of time, of course, all those evil people will be annihilated. You know, there's no question about that. And the third source that maybe surprise you is the moral majority or the Protestant apocalyptic propaganda here in the United States. So suddenly you have Jimmy Swaggart, Jerry Falwell, Franklin Graham, more recently Billy Graham, sorry, and more recently Franklin Graham, being extensively quoted, especially when they speak about apocalyptics. And there was, in fact, I have been through that. Ronald Reagan spoke 7 times publicly about Armageddon. Armageddon is nowhere to be seen in Islam. Armageddon, it's a Jewish concept that was recycled in Christian apocalypticism. And suddenly, they start speaking about Armageddon, quoting American sources and, in the beginning, Ronald Reagan. Because there is a whole, to go into it for just a few seconds, they consider that America is governed by the Antichrist, and so that anything the man in power in America says reflects and helps the Muslim to anticipate what the Antichrist is going to do. So after this book, you had a whole new genre that is pretty heterogeneous and certainly not Islamic in my interpretation. And after him, you had in the 90s an author like Mohamed Issa Daoud. So he went even further. he imported the UFO theory and the Bermuda Triangle. So for him, the Antichrist is governing America from the Bermuda Triangle. He has two branches, one in Hollywood, one in Broadway. So through popular entertainment, so finally, it makes sense. Eh? So through popular entertainment is, you know, controlling the minds of the Americans. So he doesn't have to sit at the White House. And of course, he's using flying saucers for his different journeys out of the Bermuda Triangle. Okay. So, and you add also the importation of Nostradamus. Heavily. So all this has nothing to do with Islam, and my main interpretation is that until today, the immense majority of the readers of this kind of literature, they don't take it literally. It's some kind of a compensatory literature, because in the end, all the bad guys are killed, you know. So it's a way to compensate from the day-to-day anguish and or humiliation, but it's certainly not a political guidance. But still, it's very dangerous, because there is a tension between the religious establishment and the those new popular best-selling author. So the religious establishment doesn't want to confront it directly, not to legitimate them, but at the same time is starting to criticize the way Jewish and Christian prophecies are being used. And during doctrinal fight inside Islam against the Israeliyat, against the Jewish and Christian imports. But they are fighting that, the Israeliyat, but they are using again the anti-Semitic material, which is why today, I'm sorry to say, if you go around Al-Azhar, you can find very easily tens of these booklets that are very violent in their anti-Semitism, and most of them come from this kind of, from this line of thought. So they are not official, but you can find them next to the official centers. So you have this tension, and you had in 2000 a famous Saudi sheikh, Safar al-Hawali, who is the leader of the Islamic Sahwa, of the Islamic protest against the Wahhabi regime, went even further. He established a counter-apocalypse. So he's taking the Book of Revelation, and he says those Christians are so dumb they can't understand anything. The new Jerusalem is Mecca. Rome is, of course, America. The beast is Zionism. But not so much Jewish Zionism, but Christian Zionism, that is the main enemy. And there, he established a new interpretation. So fortunately, he condemned 9/11, so he then delivered to Al-Qaeda the apocalyptic toolbox. And it stopped. But after 9/11, you had more and more writers, and especially an Egyptian one, who published a booklet called Armageddon, so again a new concept in Islam, and he said it was published mid-October 2001, only 7 days after the beginning of the bombing of Kabul by the US-led coalition. And he said, this is the end of time, this is the final battle, Al-Malham al-Kubra, the great battle, Armageddon, Armageddon, he's Islamizing it. But Afghanistan is nothing. The most important thing is Iraq. And a lot of writers started to say that. So you imagine when America invaded Iraq, they were already popular, but they became really, they had so much clout, you know, because also Iraq is very much connected to the end of time in several Islamic traditions. About the treasury of the Euphrates, and so there is this vast interpretation about that. So you have this wave of apocalyptic literature that is, it's an environment, a very dangerous environment, but it has no direct political impact. And then the two other more direct, very briefly, it's what I called populist messianism or apocalyptic opportunism. So basically you have it with militia leaders with very low or even no religious credentials, who use this apocalyptic propaganda to challenge the religious establishment. So it's very clear with Muqtada Sadr and the Mahdi's army, I have a lot of material with Hezbollah also. And I don't think that neither Nasrallah nor Muqtada are Mahdist people, but they use this discourse, among other discourse, to reach out to the masses. And this populist messianism, you find it now much more with Shia movements, but it could be with Sunni movements. There was a part of this kind of opportunism in previous insurgencies or rebellions. And what is, of course, this is already troubling, because even if the leader is not believing this kind of propaganda, for example, I have booklets with, you know, Hezbollah militiamen with white wings falling on the Israeli lines, or explaining that the Mahdi interfered in the battle in July 2006, which is why Israel was defeated, quote unquote. So this is always quite puzzling. But what is more, of course, threatening, and this is a direct threat, is what I called apocalyptic vertigo. So it's still a vertigo. They have not yet fallen, but still. So you have it already, not with Al-Qaeda Central, certainly not, but you have it with, you had it with Zarqawi, and there's a great article by David Cook, who is a pioneer in the apocalyptic studies here in the States, and he made an article in the last issue of the Sentinel about Iraq in the apocalyptic scenarios, and he quotes at length different Zarqawi's speeches and articles. But you have it much more in Abu Musab al-Suri. And you know that Abu Musab al-Suri, who is now disappeared somewhere in October 2005 after being captured in Pakistan, that he is the main challenge, the main alternative to the centralized Al-Qaeda global jihad. His own vision of the global jihad is much more decentralized, autonomous. And his treaty that was put online at the end of 2004, Dawa lil Muqawama al-Islamiyya al-Alamiyya, the call to the world Islamic resistance. So it has been studied at length, except for the last 100 pages, because all the counterterrorism experts considered it was, what is this apocalyptic mumbo-jumbo? Maybe that is the key to the rest of the treaties. And I've been studying that really in detail. And it's a complicated literature. But, for example, just to give you an he's inventing a hadith. You have a famous hadith where the Jews are being pursued, and the stones are talking, the trees are talking, to say to the Muslim, oh, there's a Jew hidden behind me, please come and kill him. He's inventing it, and he put Christian instead of Jew. And it's the whole idea of, you know, Christian Zionism being the main enemy. So you have that, and then you have in Iraq this Ansar Imam al-Mahdi. They are very serious, you know. Their head is al-Yemeni, so he's the vanguard of the Mahdi. He's not only his representative on earth, but he's the man who will make it all happen. So he has apparently thousands of followers in southern Iraq. He already demanded Sistani and Khamenei to pledge allegiance to him. And apparently it was the most extremist of his supporters that were crushed in the bloodbath in Najaf in January 2007. But he's still very strong. In Basra and Nasiriyah during the last Ashura, that was an uneven year, so they didn't go all the way, he could take over some neighborhoods of Basra and Nasiriyah in quite a showdown. And and this is the only movement I found that is, if I may say, candidly apocalyptic. So, just to end, this growing wave of apocalyptic literature, but with no direct political consequence. This temptation of messianic populism that you can find with militia leaders, but of course the rank and file, maybe they buy it, maybe they think it's serious. And then the apocalyptic vertigo that you find on the margins of Al-Qaeda on one side, and with this militia in southern Iraq on the other side. Thank you very much.